Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with eight kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 192 of The Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis, here as always with Sarah Powers. What's up, Sarah?
Hey, Megan.
Are you ready for a showdown?
I love this so much.
We are going to, I don't even know, like I'm picturing like an MMA ring.
Yes, with a bell.
With like, a bell.
There needs to be a chime.
Ding, ding, ding. And the fight today is in this corner, toddlers.
Yep.
And in that corner, teens.
Oh my gosh.
Because they have so many similarities.
They have,
They're both wonderful and frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't even know like how this idea came up, but it is, they are so, there are a lot of parallels and I don't have teens yet, but I've been lucky enough to follow you closely. And, you know, obviously other teens that I know and moms raising teens. But I think this is going to be really fun, really interesting. We're going to go kind of through some categories that both fighters display. And I don't know, maybe we'll pick a winner for each one, or maybe we'll just throw our hands up and be like, yeah.
I don't even know how you call a fight at the end.
No.
I'm picturing like someone lying on the mat though, and like the ref like holds their hand up and then drops it because they're just out. So, all right, Sarah, well, are you ready?
We are ready. Okay.
Is that a fighting thing or like a base? Like this shows like how ignorant I am about all sports.
Well, so my most recent experience is the show Battle Bots, which is a robot fighting show, but it's set up very much like a fight, like a human fight, only it's remote control robots.
Okay.
So anyway.
I'm probably actually more familiar with gladiators from like.
Right.
Back in the olden days. But well, anyway,
regardless, we are going to talk about your toddlers and your teens.
Yes.
And I'm really excited. Actually, I think we're going to get to some meaty parenting
stuff. Yeah.
Even as we laugh. Okay.
Agreed.
So, but all right, first,
so before we get to that main event, if you will, we're really excited to welcome a new sponsor today because it's something Sarah and I both love. It's a family game and it's called Disney Codenames. There's a classic party game, Codenames, which we've played before in my family, but it combines it with those beloved characters from the past 90 years of Disney. So in my household, we are big time board game people, and we're already fans of the regular Codenames, but it was really fun to get to try this with the Disney character twist. And in general, I have to say, like, I find that having those recognizable characters can sometimes convince like a reluctant kid or maybe a child who's like right on the age range where they're not quite comfortable with the game yet. It can really kind of encourage them to try a game they maybe wouldn't otherwise have tried or stay engaged. So I really loved trying it out and I'm excited about it.
Yeah. So that was exactly my experience. My kids were all over this game when it arrived in the mail last week. And seeing those familiar characters is totally what made them want to dive right in, especially my youngest. And they actually dug in and taught themselves the rules before I could even get there to help them. It does say 8 and up, but Violet, as you know, is turning 6 this week. And she was totally able to play because there's an option to play with pictures instead of words. And actually, one of my favorite things is just how flexible the options are. So you can have from 2 to 8 players, which means a couple of kids can play it or a whole big
family.
Hard to find. Mm-hmm. And the individual game rounds are short, 15 minutes or even less, which means I could sit down and play around, then get up and make dinner or whatever.
Yeah.
So that is like perfect. It basically checked all the boxes for me of what I need in a family game. And I am a little bit picky because we are in this stage of life where we have 2 older ones and then 1 who can't read yet. So I actually have a little audio clip I want to play for you guys of my kids talking about the game.
What do you think makes a good game for our whole family?
I think that for our family, you should probably have short games that don't take up too much time.
Yeah. Anything you particularly love about Disney Codenames?
I like that there's strategy. You could take big gambles or play it really safe and both could win you the game.
So Reed, how old are you?
I'm 8.
And how long do you think it took you to figure out how to play Disney Codenames?
I think it took me about 5 minutes.
It was pretty quick, huh? You guys got into it before I even could get into the instructions.
Yeah.
Is it fun seeing some of your favorite Disney characters on the cards?
Yeah.
How old are you, Violet?
5.
Are you almost 6?
Yeah.
How many days till your birthday?
4.
What is your favorite character that you've seen in the Disney Codenames game?
Probably Jasmine.
Well, I like Jasmine too. And who's her pet? Raja the tiger?
Yeah.
Yeah, you like tigers. Mm-hmm. Hey, where can people find Disney Codenames?
Target.
That's right. We saw it at Target.
Oh my gosh, that's so cute. And yes, I remember those days of having to find just the right game for everyone's level. We've kind of moved out of that, but honestly, even at, you know, Clara's age 9, sometimes it's not easy to find something that she can really grasp and the big kids aren't bored with. So Disney Codenames totally works for all ages and stages. It could work for a couple of kids after school on a rainy day or for a big family game night like we like to have over here. So Disney Codenames is brought to you by USAopoly, or as we like to call them, the Op. They've been entertaining families for 25 years and have lots of fun versions of games that you already know and love.
Well, here's the best part, guys. I know you're already at Target. I know you. I see you.
Probably right now.
Right now. So you guys can find Disney Codenames at Target or online at Target.com. We'll put a link in the show notes. It's $24.99 and you won't be disappointed in this game. Again, it's Disney Codenames. It's available in the game section at your local Target or online at Target.com.
All right. So should we start this battle?
Yeah. And I want to start this battle by saying we actually really love our toddlers and teens. We've gotten a couple of questions lately about our opinions about one-year-olds, Megan, because we have sort of laughed and come down hard on them. I think if you've listened from the beginning, you know we love our one-year-olds, obviously. We had eight of them between us. But I think one thing that's really hard about young toddlers in particular, and we'll get into this, is mom and dad spend the whole first year like getting down all the systems and adjusting to parenthood. Yeah. And it feels like things are just settling in. And then this personality emerges where you're like, whoa. And like, you have to think about, so it's not the toddlers or the one-year-olds that we don't love. Of course we love them, but I think it's like the rug pulled out from under you phase. It's a very physically demanding stage of parenting.
So just, physically demanding. Just when you and you're not like, used to it yet.
Yeah. And just when you feel like you've gotten a handle on things. Yeah. So for anyone who's wondered about when we say we hate 1 year, I don't think we've ever said we hate 1 year.
We've never said that. We just said it's the pits.
It is rough. And we're talking it's rough on mom. The little sweet 1 year olds are. They are. We love them. But in
and
a way,
I will also say I didn't realize how rough it was till I was like coming out of it, because I would be like, oh, my toddler is so adorable and I love this and I love the stage. And then at the end, every single time I'm like, whoa, what just happened to me?
Right. Yes, it is. Yeah, it is intense. And I'm sure with teens, it's the same way. You go through this kind of easier period for a few years, like the one I'm in right now.
Yeah, and then the gravy, right? Yeah. It's the gravy years and you're in them right now. And also what can be a little different about teens is, you know, when they're toddlers, you don't know them yet. You're just starting to know them.
Yeah.
And so then suddenly it's like all their personality really comes out strong. Yeah. It's like their personality at a factor of 100. And the same thing with teens, only you got used to them in a different way. Like you've had all these years to get to know them and know them when they're in their sweet phase or their cuddly phase or their quiet phase or whatever it is that they go through. There are those gravy years for many, many kids. And then suddenly they come out and I feel like what happens in teenhood, which is probably kind of what is happening in toddlerhood, is whatever kid they're going to turn into as a toddler, they're like this ultra concentrated version of that.
Right.
And as a teenager, whatever adult they're going to turn into, it's like the same thing. They get this, like, they're like the most extreme version of that person. It's like they're trying to get there.
Right.
And they have to go way over the line and then kind of pull back.
Yeah.
So it's been really fun to watch. You know, I have a 19-year-old, and while he's still technically a teen, he's not a teen anymore. Yeah. He's an adult. And it's really fun to see him and my 21-year-old to just see like those personality traits that came out and how intense they were and then how they kind of
now you get
hold
to
them
see,
back,
yeah,
and now we
the
get
other
to see the
side
of that. Yeah, exactly.
I love that. Well, I think at the heart of why we wanted to do this episode is, I believe, anytime you kind of understand what's happening developmentally for your kids, it's easier to kind of meet that behavior with a little bit of humor, a little bit of empathy. It doesn't mean you have to put up with abuse or allow unacceptable behavior at all. We would not advocate that. But when you can see it for what it is, which is a phase and most likely a necessary developmental phase, then I think it just takes the pressure off you to like correct all this behavior or somehow control it, when in fact it is meant to be. And therefore you just have to find ways to cope, find ways that work for your family to get through it. Take lots of breaks, you know?
Yeah.
But they're meant to be doing this, I guess, both toddlers and teens.
And it's a good lesson. Like the toddler and teen years are both a great lesson in letting go and kind of like not taking yourself so seriously or like getting over yourself a little bit, because you realize how little control you actually have sometimes.
Yeah.
And whether it's a teenager who's going to do, I mean, they're bigger than you They're going to do what they want to do. And you just hope that they're going to listen, right? Or a toddler who are uncommonly strong.
Yeah.
And wily and sneaky. And like they learn, they become like this crazy, physically intense version of what they were before. They can also get away with a lot. Like you have to sleep sometime.
Yeah.
Right. And you can't put them in a cage. I heard that that's not allowed. Not legal. So it's like you kind of have to at some point throw your hands up and let it and like be and have some faith, I guess. And that's tough on both sides of the spectrum.
It is. It requires a lot of us. So here's how we're going to do this. We came up with some kind of categories where we think toddlers and teens are really similar. I'll kind of set up what that category is and talk a little bit about the toddler. And then I can't wait for you to speak to the teens. And then we'll just kind of look at like, how are they similar and how can we support this as moms? And in some cases it's very, very similar. And in some cases the way we react to this behavior is quite different, I think, from toddlers versus teens.
Yeah.
So you ready to jump in?
I'm ready.
Okay. So the first big one that I'm sure will surprise no one is big emotions slash tantrums. So in toddlers, if you don't have a toddler yet, you might think of this as the terrible twos, but I am here to tell you that somehow they get a memo around 11 months or their first birthday. And that's when the first, like, I'm mad about something and I'm going to let you know about it. I'm not hungry or wet or tired. I am just PO'd that you're not letting me eat the remote control. Now, I think those are like little glimpses. I think when it kicks into gear is 18 to 24 months. And that's why I lovingly say that that is one of the hardest ages for moms, because you can't use logic. It's very unlike even a three-year-old tantrum, which is its own kind of beast. But these young toddlers, they just have emotions that are really big. And I think the most striking thing is how out of proportion their reactions are to what's actually happening. Like we think of ourselves as these reasonable beings, but it could be about, you know, the color of a cup or the way that the sandwich is cut. I mean, there's a million examples. So most of you out there are quite familiar, but if you're not, just know that number one, I think it shows up earlier than two for a lot of kids. I think 18 months seems to be prime, and that it might be bigger and scarier than you think. They're real big emotions. So tell me about the teens.
Well, and there's so many of the same things that are going on. I mean, teens have the additional layer of hormones, which let's not, you know, underestimate those. Right. But in both cases, there's big time brain development going on and big time, like your body is changing and you're learning an incredible amount and you're moving toward this more independent phase. There's a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. And one thing I think is really interesting is about teens is, that now I have parented four teenagers. This is crazy. And I can already see how Clara is like getting, like she's moving toward adolescence and I can see how it's starting to get, I don't know, kind of puberty-ish.
Yep.
But depending on a kid's personality in the teen years, this is really manifest in very different ways. So like you might have a kid who just becomes kind of generally grumpy or they might become withdrawn. You got the kid who rage quits, like they rage quit everything. And by rage quit, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Like I'm picturing like flip the table and walk away.
Sometimes it's literally like take the board game and throw it. Sometimes it's like the kid who just will stop playing. Well, there's like, sometimes it's a kid who won't finish the conversation, right? Some of the, like those things that are going to be the kid's natural tendencies, like I said, really go to the extreme. I also just want to really quickly touch on the fact that your kid having a sunny personality or being kind of quiet or easygoing does not mean they're not going through all those big emotions.
And I love that.
Thinking back to when I was a teenager, I was like the friendliest teenager. I never fought with my parents. I was just smiley all the time. And that doesn't mean I wasn't going in my room and writing tortured things in my journal for hours and hours. So it doesn't always manifest in a way that is disruptive or that you would even notice. And it doesn't mean you have to follow your kid into their room and be like, are you really okay? I mean, really, are you okay?
Right.
So really, are you okay? But like, it's like kind of keeping an eye on everybody and how they are in social situations and what their place is in the family. I mean, I can see in my family, like there are kids who go along to get along and there are kids who push the envelope and there are kids who don't care if anyone likes them. And there are kids who want everyone to like them. And all of those things change the way that they kind of manifest those big feelings. It doesn't always look like a tantrum, but sometimes it's still a tantrum, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say really quick, for me at that age, I became very passive aggressive. That was my version of a tantrum.
Okay.
That wouldn't have been something anyone even might have watched or noticed, you know? So I don't know. And I don't think logic necessarily works. Like they have the brain capacity to understand logic. I think what I want them to have more is some self-awareness to start to understand, like, when I feel this way, it's, you know, like, I don't even know I'm feeling this way, but I am.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's not like I can talk them out of it.
Right. And in both cases, the toddlers and the teens, sometimes the feelings are actually very unpleasant and scary. Like, nobody wants to be yelling at their mom or hanging up on their best friend or pushing, whether it's toddlers or teens. They don't. Right. It's because they're feeling like out of their body, out of control with those feelings. And the other thing that I just thought of kind of when you were talking about teens is, in both cases, there could be or often is a fair amount of kind of anxiety behind the rage or the feelings. I don't necessarily mean clinical diagnosed anxiety, but if you think about how you feel when things aren't in control or changing too much, or you feel really apprehensive, and toddlers are the same. Their world is big and they're figuring out where they are in it. And anytime any of us feels anxious, we are not our best selves. So
agreed.
Well, do we have any ways to kind of support these, the big feelings? The ones I was going to suggest is just, I try with all my kids and their big feelings not to judge the feelings. In other words, I don't say things like, this is ridiculous.
Right.
Like, it's just a sandwich. Like, you might be thinking it's just a sandwich, but I try not to say it's just a sandwich because it really doesn't matter. The feelings are already there out in front, probably in public. The tears are already there. The yelling is already there. So to say what you're upset about is not worth this display, even if that's totally true and you think it in your head, it's not generally helpful. So I try to separate judging the feelings, but then stick to the behavior. So whatever behavior is not okay. So a toddler is not allowed to hit me or, you know, draw on the wall or whatever. I spend my time limiting the behaviors, but just knowing that the feelings are going to be there and it's not really my job to judge whether it's worth it, like to have this tantrum over that thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think it's very similar for teenagers. I mean, you have to focus on what they're actually doing and they might not like me and I can't take that I can't take that personally or get offended or show, like if I show offense, I feel like then that just creates this dynamic I don't want to create.
Yeah.
I will show offense if they do something offensive.
Right. Like you don't have to be abused.
Right. But that's different than them just not being that into me.
Mm-hmm.
Or not liking what I have to say, or being in a bad mood, or whatever it is. I mean, that's going to happen. And I try to stay out of their way if I have to, like when they're in a mood like that. I will kind of have some flexibility about the way we do things like chores or having to be around your siblings or whatever, if I can tell. And we have a lot of people in a small house.
Yeah.
So sometimes I have to like kind of let kids get off the hook for stuff or make exceptions when it's for the good of everyone, for the good of the unit. If one person doesn't come to the dinner table because it's good for the unit, then I would rather have that than have a stressful, grumpy dinner. I have found a lot of the times if you kind of have a little bit of, you take it seriously, but you still have a bit of a sense of humor about it. The kids sometimes do the same. Like my kids will joke about their, not necessarily when they're in the rage, but they'll joke about it later and be like, well, I was like, William cracks me up. He'll say, I was just having a really hormonal hard time then. And I'm very ragey these days. But when he's raging, he's not going to say
that. He doesn't see it. It's like blind rage. Yeah,
right. Exactly. But later he can kind of acknowledge it. And
I actually
we just
love
try
that.
To have a sense of humor about it. And that's his style. Right. Yeah. Will and Owen is would still argue with me to the death. But Owen's just coming into it.
Yeah.
Will's kind of peaking.
Yeah.
Right. So he can kind of look back at the last 2 years and see things Owen can't see yet. And that's part of it's like the muscle. Like you get confident because you realize I was really mad and I didn't die.
Yes. Yes.
And I got over it. I got past it and here I am. And like, it takes experience to know that, like that you're not actually going to explode or, you know,
and I think
have
as
to
a
hide
parent,
under your bed for the rest of your life.
As a parent, we are the ones who can, when we show that we're not overly fazed by their drama. And again, you can draw the line at not wanting to be abused. But if we show that we see it's normal and that we love them anyway, and they still have to make reparations if they yell at someone or whatever, but it's not tearing us apart, then we're showing them like, this is normal. Like it is, you will get through this. I love what you just said. And the last thing I was going to say about the toddlers too, is we get pretty good at avoiding the meltdowns by, you know, not taking them to Target at nap time and like all these little things they do. And as someone who is good at managing my life to avoid big meltdowns, I just want to say that is a good strategy and it will not avoid them entirely. So you could do all of those things and you'll still be met with big feelings and it's normal. So,
yeah,
but it is, you do learn to not do things to put yourself in the way. And I'm sure with teenagers, it's the same. Like, you don't poke the bear when, you know.
Right. So. Exactly. Exactly. Very similar.
Okay. So moving on to another lovely characteristic, and that is defiance, arguing, and basically thinking that parents' ideas are terrible.
Right.
So for toddlers, I think this comes out as soon as they can say things like no or mine, which is another favorite one-word phrase. They don't have to be very old. They're coming to realize that they're not the same person as you. Like, compliance and agreement is not kind of like hardwired into your connection. And so they are actually supposed to, you know, individuate or whatever you call it. But I think when it gets exhausting, and I have one particular child who just, actually two, but one in particular who just, the automatic response is the opposite of whatever I have suggested.
Right.
And so this is not really the same as tantruming. And I'm sure it's the same with teens, because you can have a level-headed, like not super emotional kid who is still just opposing everything.
Yeah.
And we, even in our episode about chores, we talked a little bit about these personalities, like, no, why, no, why?
Right.
And it starts in toddlerhood. So how is it with teens?
Same. I think that that is one where not all teens display it to the same level as toddlers.
I
think for toddlers, the no and why and gimme and mine is kind of so universal.
Yeah.
And with teens, teens get really savvy. They start figuring out how to work you. And some of them, so again, an example of like them kind of becoming who they're going to be and like testing it out on you, is some teenagers get really good at not arguing, not defying. But there's like something in it for them. Right. So it's like they become a little more savvy.
Right.
They'll learn how to work you. And some don't care and they will argue and they will defy you. So it's like you have to kind of like, it's kind of like it's become this more mature version of the toddler situation.
Yeah.
I've got a kid, Owen, who is going to be some kind of like a lawyer or something.
Yeah.
He's a fantastic debater. But right now, he just wants the kitchen table to be his like practicing ground.
Yeah.
And he will stick to the most like illogical argument. Like, he is in it for the fight.
Yeah.
Whereas Will will only fight in as much as it gets him what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
Very different. And he goes about it very differently. And the other two were the same. Like, Isaac would kind of avoid and be like pleasant when he was around. So I think he kind of got away with a lot. Like, I think he flew under the radar. Like, they learn how to kind of make their personalities work for them. And so it's impossible to know how it's going to look. I think for myself, and another thing to keep in mind too, is like, they're working out a lot of big stuff in their heads.
Yeah.
Like, there's these ideas that they have about fairness and justice and love and philosophy and like, they're kind of trying it out on you, but also you're super irrelevant. Like, you're only relevant in that you're there providing a home and food and meals and rides. And like, eventually you'll become relevant again. But right now it's like, you're kind of not, it's a really weird place to be. And it does get better, but not for a while.
Well, I almost think teens sound harder in this area.
Emotionally, like, a lot harder.
Yeah, because a toddler is just a knee jerk no.
They're just a bag of cells, basically, a toddler, right? Yeah,
I think the hardest part about toddlers is, again, like going back to how I started talking about this smiley baby who waves to everyone in the grocery store, it feels like a betrayal. It feels like I worked the entire year or year and a half to get enough sleep, to get them on a routine, and we're doing so well. And now all of a sudden, they don't want to do anything that they used to want to do. And with toddlers, it's also completely illogical, right? Like their favorite thing that they want to do one day, they don't like the next day. And so it's just like, it defies any sense or logic. But I think if you cannot take it personally, it is not about you. And this is a good time with toddlers to start thinking about the hills you want to die on, thinking about the boundaries you want to hold, and thinking about the the times when you're going to dig in or you're going to give them a little more freedom. Because remember, like that giving freedom and then having them come up against a boundary and then giving a little more freedom and come up against a boundary. Yeah. That's what they're supposed to be doing. Yep. So it's not easy, but your job is to sort of be like, okay, well, maybe you can go barefoot out front today. Yeah. And maybe that is not important to me because I know I'm going to have to hold a boundary later when you need a bath. You know, so you're constantly figuring out where that place is, which is exhausting. Yeah.
It is. And it's not that different for teens, honestly. What is different is I'm not going to allow my kid to say no to me anymore.
Right.
When they were two, okay.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? But like, you're not going to, you don't say no to me.
Right.
I mean, but like at 13, I'll tolerate a certain amount of, I'm not even going to say arguing, of questioning.
Yeah.
But at some point, I am going to shut that down and just say, okay, and I will admit I have sometimes crossed over the line and said things like your opinions don't matter, which isn't true. And I've had to apologize and say, that's not what I meant. What I meant is I've registered your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to continue telling me what your opinion is. Now I need you to do the thing I asked you to do.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just have to keep going back to that. Okay. Registered. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I need you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But mom, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Got it. Now what I need you to do is stop talking. And there are times when I've held my hand up and said, I don't want to hear anymore. I'm going to walk away now.
Uh-huh.
And I expect this to get done. And not all kids need that.
Right.
But some will just dig in until like the last, you know, they just won't stop.
Yeah.
And the other ones, the other, you know, thinking at parents' ideas are terrible. I have had a conversation with two of my kids. Like we do a lot of ribbing in our family. There's a lot of joking.
Mm-hmm.
We all kind of give each other a little guff sometimes. And I've had to tell my kids before that they hurt my feelings. Like, mm-hmm. because they can take it too far to like where mom's an idiot. And mm-hmm. they'll take me seriously. I don't do it all the time. I don't go cry in my room. But I'll be like, you know, guys, like, I know we're kind of ribbing, but like that made me feel bad.
Yeah.
And so then I can tell they're all very nice to me for a while. And it's, you know, it's like, I'm not doing it because I want to make a big drama or make anyone feel bad. But I also don't want to feel bad in my own home. So sometimes you have to like draw that line and just explain to them like, yeah, okay, I get you. I hear you.
Well, and you're also showing that that is a thing that humans in relationships do. You know, they joke with each other. They love each other. And if someone crosses the line, they don't just let it go or passive aggressively, like, you know, get back at them another way. You address it.
And it's a safe place for them to learn that.
Yes,
like it's
exactly.
a safe place for them to learn what those lines are.
Yeah.
Before we move on, I have to say, I want to talk really quick about picking your hills to die on, because that's a saying that you and I both use all the time.
Yes.
Which I want to, in case anyone's a new listener, just means this is not the hill I'm going to die on, means I'm choosing not to make a big deal about this because if I'm going to die on a hill, it's going to be a different one.
Right.
But you were leaving me a message the other day and said that. Did one of your kids think that you were actually going to die on a hill?
Yes. I think it was Violet. And she was like, dying on a hill? What? Dying on a hill? I know. I should go back and find that because I literally
really
had to stop.
Sarah's boxing me and she says, that's not a hill I'm going to die on. Then I heard you go, no. I'm not actually dying on a hill. It was very funny.
I know. It's not really that much different from the phrase pick your battles, but for some reason I just like it so much more. And I never really heard it. Or if I heard it, it never registered before you in my life. And then immediately it became my favorite.
It.
It's just really applicable to so much of motherhood.
It really is. It really is.
Every
There's
day.
So many hills.
So many hills. So few to die on. Okay. I'm going to move on to something that is related, but is still different. And this is this push-pull between the need for independence and yet also how much they really still need us. And I'm going to imagine that there's a lot of similarities between toddlers and teens, both in why this is happening and how it plays out. So for toddlers, this is the like, all of a sudden they want to put their shoes on by themselves. They want to get in the car seat by themselves. Some more than others. I've had like probably all three extremes, like extreme doesn't care, extreme do everything by themselves, and somewhere in the middle. But once they've decided they want to do it themselves, you're in for it. They don't want help. I do it myself. You've got to watch them struggle. And like, you're just pulling your hair out because you're late. And if you could just bend over and buckle the shoe, you'd be out the door in 2 seconds. But that's going to lead to the big emotions and meltdowns that we just discussed. So it is just this constant it's a constant battle. And when they realize they can't do something or it doesn't work out like they want, then tears usually result.
And they don't always want your help either.
No, they don't want your help.
They need it, but they don't want it.
No, they don't want their help, but they are devastated when they can't do it. And either comes out in rage or frustration. So this is, and it really is this push-pull where they have an inner drive to try to do stuff by themselves that they are not yet competent to do. And we have to watch the struggle and decide when and how and if to intervene. And it's hard. So how does that work for teens?
You know, I would say, like, I think this is a place where teenagers in general are going through a big shift, a big cultural shift to what we remember about being teens, which is like, I want the car keys and I'm never here.
Okay.
Kids aren't like that anymore.
Right.
There's actually been quite a lot of research, and I've seen a few articles lately about how much kids aren't at this age, at the teenage stage, embracing independence. And I find it actually really alarming.
Yeah.
I will tell you, my kids would rather hang out at home more often than they'd like to be out. And that's not all of them, mm-hmm. but like, it's not expected anymore that kids on the day they turn 16, leave the house and go get a license. They have to be prodded. They don't necessarily want to get their first job. It's a weird place that we are with teens right now. I think where the independence is I think that they think they're more emotionally independent than they really are. And I think they think that they have better decision-making skills than they actually do.
Sure.
But it doesn't manifest the same way it used to. So that was something I was not prepared for as a mom of teens. I remember the way I was as a teen. And like, I didn't want a curfew. I never had to give my kids a curfew. They just came home. It's just a very, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm very helpful on this one because I'm still figuring it out. And I think that a lot of parents are in this place where like, I want my kids to be, the more independence they want, the better. I'm like, do it. Yes. Do it yourself. Okay. You want to ride your bike, you know, to your friend's house. It's 5 miles away. You're going to regret that. Go for it. Yeah. And then they figure that out. And I feel like I'm pushing it more than it's happening around me. And I'm having to kind of deal with it.
So, and I'm sure I was coming to this with the more stereotypical.
I think you like, have the assumption everybody does, right?
Yeah.
But
So I was going to mention this book at some point in here. It was inevitable, but I'm reading How to Raise an Adult, which is a book that's been on my radar forever. It's about 6 years old, probably. Julie Lithcott Haynes, and she was the freshman dean at Stanford during the years when basically millennials started showing up at college.
Yep.
And so for like 16 years as freshman dean at Stanford, noticing the difference in independence and ability to cope with adult life, basically, it's a it has so much research. It's exactly what you're talking about. And my kids aren't even there yet, but I find it so interesting.
Yeah. And I don't think like, I don't think the generation is doomed or anything.
No.
And I have noticed that some of my kids, there are definitely things that I've noticed in some of mine that where I feel like they're a little ahead of their peers in certain places as far as it's not embracing the independence, but just not feeling like the world's going to end if they screw up. That's
right.
The thing that I think that's what I think the cause is. I think kids are so afraid that if they mess something up, everything is over. And I think that that's one place I may have done things right. But culturally still things have changed a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think your kind of hands-offness or free-rangeness or whatever you want to call it is unusual compared to the parenting that's happening in the culture. And I think that's why people have been flocking to you and reading you and liking you because it's why you could have 5 kids because you can't overparent kids.
You really can't.
So I'll link that book. We kind of got on a tangent there, but I will link it up.
Yeah.
But kind of if there's a way to support this, at least with toddlers, it's let them do as much as they can by themselves and don't, again, just like the first two things, don't take the frustration as there's something wrong or something you need to fix. I mean, you don't always have time to sit through a meltdown about tying your shoe. Sometimes you're going to have to pick up the kid, put on their shoe and go. Like that's just life, but give them lots of opportunities. We just did that episode about chores. Give them lots of opportunities for trying something that's hard. And when you have the time, grab 15 minutes and teach them a skill that's hard for them, but in that way that feels good, like they've mastered something, and make sure that they're challenged, that they're playing outside and climbing stuff and around other older kids. And like, sometimes it's a bored kid who doesn't have enough that's challenging them or that's, you know, so I don't know, I guess, but it's not easy. It's not easy to watch them want to do everything by themselves.
And I think it's a good reminder that at this, you know, when they're young, that you can start introducing that independence, like in those kind of low stakes ways, whether that's letting your kid interact with an adult instead of you always getting in front of them and making the ask, let them make the ask.
Yeah.
They're going to be embarrassed or feel silly, or maybe someone's going to say no. But that's okay. Like, they have to fail in small ways, like in low stakes ways.
Yeah.
And they have to do it over and over and over and over. And, you know, I'm reminded of something that happened with Owen recently where he and this teacher were kind of like locked in just this battle because there was an assignment. And this is not only the need for independence, this is stubbornness. This is all defiance, thinking adults are stupid. Like, these are all of those things wrapped into one
burrito
experience. But he thought her directions were unclear and dumb. And so I kind of just stood back and let him and her battle it out. And at the same time, this teacher was particularly like kind of emailing me a lot and trying to get me in the middle of it.
Right.
And I'm like, Owen's 13. He can, you know, he has to deal with this.
Yeah.
So it got to the point where he was not going to do well on this assignment. And he's really into his GPA and he was stressing. And I said, okay, Owen, well, I've looked over everything and you're not doing what she's asked you to do.
Mm.
And he said, I know, but that's because I don't agree with it and blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay. And that's fine. You don't have to agree with it. And you can choose to dig in and do it your way and get a C.
Yeah.
Or you can just do what she's asking and get the A. It's your choice.
Yeah.
I don't care what you do.
Yeah.
Like, because I understood his point.
Yes.
But he decided it was worth it to get the A and he did it. And then he's like, guess what? I got 100% on it. I was like, yeah. But I said, what'd you do? He's like, I just did what she asked. I was like, yep. So life is like partially working, like figuring out the game, how the game is played and deciding when to dig in your heels.
But you had to present that. You presented it and you were completely okay with the C, which is what so many parents are not anymore.
Yeah.
So that's like, just take note, everyone.
And frankly, I knew he wouldn't. He would.
Yeah, but he. But you had to be okay with presenting it that way,
right?
And really be okay. And yeah, I love it.
Yeah, and inwardly, I would have been frustrated. I would have been like, "Ugh, there's Owen being Owen."
Yeah,
but it wouldn't have been the end of the world, and I wouldn't have cared. And like it, you know, it's seventh grade.
Yeah,
life
yeah.
goes on. It's and not on his permanent record.
And the fact that he arrived there himself is so much more valuable than you helping him get the A. And then next time, it's the same thing.
And he stressed so hard about it. That's what's so funny. Like I look. It was like 2 weeks of like meltdowns and I was getting texts from John. He's like, I don't know what to do about Owen and this assignment. Can you help him? And I was like, dude, I've tried. Like there's, and he had to work through that himself.
Yeah.
And you know, he learned something.
Yes.
There may in the future be a hill he does die on.
Yeah.
But this wasn't it.
When it's time to dig in, we know he has the capability to go the long haul.
He's going to go the long haul. He's got the endurance.
He does have the endurance. Okay. So this is a good time. We're going to take a break and we will come back with some more toddler teen.
Yeah. So we want to talk about our sponsor, Zola. So Zola takes the stress out of wedding planning by offering free wedding websites, your dream wedding registry, and easy to use planning tools. And you can conveniently manage everything online and in one place, which saves a lot of time. You start with a free wedding website, it takes just a couple minutes to set up, and Zola makes it really easy to personalize with your favorite design. And then you can actually put your Zola registry on your wedding website. So your guests get all the information they need just in one place. So once you've got that in place, then you can build out your registry. And I think it's really cool because there's something like at every price point, and there are some really unique gifts. I gave a couple, I know, a really cool experience gift of a tour to Speakeasy in Chicago, which was totally unique and memorable and not something that I figured they were getting from a million other people. Guests also love the free shipping and returns, price matching, and more. So to start your free wedding website and get $50 off your registry on Zola, go to zola.com/themomhour. That's Zola, Zola.com/themomhour.
Well, I am excited to welcome back Audible as a sponsor today. So obviously, we know that listening is a great way to learn and get inspired. That's why we make this podcast for you guys. And that's also why we're excited to partner up with Audible on this episode. So with Audible, if you're not familiar, you get access to an unbeatable selection of audiobooks, including bestsellers, motivational books, mysteries, thrillers, memoirs, and more. They have the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet. And right now with Amazon Originals, the selection has gotten even more custom with content made for members. So in our family, we use audiobooks a ton with the kids. Brian plays one in the car every day when he takes them to school. And I find it's a really nice alternative to screen time when they need to chill out, but I don't want them on an iPad. So we put on the Harry Potter series and we AirPlay it from our phone into our living room speakers. And they literally just gather round for, I don't know if you've heard it, Megan, but Jim Dale does the reading on the Harry Potter audiobooks.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Just amazing. So Audible members can choose three titles every month, one audiobook and two of these Audible originals. that you can't hear anywhere else. Members also get access to exclusive audio fitness programs to start the new year off on the right foot. You can listen on any device, anytime, anywhere, and they make it really easy to exchange audiobooks. You get rollover credits, and this library of audiobooks is yours to keep forever, even after you cancel, which is really cool. So you guys can get started with a 30-day trial when you go to audible.com/themomhour or text themomhour to 500-500. It's Audible, audible.com/themomhour or text themomhour to 500-500.
All right, should we get back to it?
Let's do it. Okay, so my next little category, I think, is a positive one for both toddlers and teens, and that is this rapid acquisition of skills and interests. Like, they go for toddlers, they go from being a blob to liking stuff. I mean, it's really fun when, you know, you notice that they have a favorite animal or a favorite book, and they now are obsessed with whatever, a character from their favorite show. And it's so fun to see their kind of personalities and opinions come out. And then they're also just rapidly acquiring skills. One of the biggest is language, you know, during the first or that second year from 1 to 2. I mean, I always joke that's like the reason I keep them around. It's one of my favorite phases of language acquisition is just one word and then two words at a time and then little sentences and the connections they make all on their own of this world of language. So that, I think, as a parent is just so fun to watch. And I'm curious how, with teens, how that works, because it's also a time of like lots of new activities and opinions and interests.
Yeah. Well, it's very expensive. It can be very expensive. It's not always, but like teenagers are, you know, they're not learning skills quite the same way. They're not learning how to walk or like talk, but suddenly they're just put in front of a smorgasbord. Middle school, it starts, high school, it really peaks. They can try anything.
Yeah.
They can join the ski club. They can be in cross country. They can take up an instrument. They just have endless options and like all the energy and drive and interest. And it is fun to watch. It really is. I have to say, I'm loving watching William the way he's taken to high school. He is joining all the clubs. He started a band.
Aww.
Now, none of his friends knew how to, except for one, knew how to play an instrument when they started the band. But they have an Instagram account. They're called the Hawaiian Rolls.
They
wear Hawaiian shirts. They like play Beatles music and stuff. It's adorable. But like all of that stuff really adds up. And so, and also you can start to become like a chauffeur.
Mm-hmm.
So like you really, and it's like you want to be supportive and it can kind of creep up on you. Like you don't really see how much time you're spending driving people around.
Or right.
In our case, it really can be disruptive to our schedule because we have other kids who want to do stuff. And like also, John's got the kids half the time and he lives about half an hour away. So if William has a rehearsal or like he's done theater. So if he had a theater thing that he was in and the rehearsals are all on Saturdays and John's supposed to have them on Saturdays, like everything has to be considered. There's a lot to consider. So there's just, it's like so many moving parts. I was actually talking to a mom the other day that I know, and she was just saying like how, and she's, has another divorced family and like just how tough it can be because she doesn't want to be greedy about the weekends that she has the kids, but she's also like, I don't want them doing stuff necessarily on those weekends.
Yeah.
And there's just all these things going on and these, I don't know, there's just a lot. A lot of activity, a lot of things. And it's exhausting. The other thing we were talking about is how when their kids are little, you go through that phase, it feels like they're just kind of doing their thing and you're doing yours and you don't get interrupted as much and you kind of get in this gravy phase and then suddenly you're getting interrupted again, but for a completely different reason.
Right.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that's interesting. I guess I don't even have a way to support toddlers through this phase because first of all, it happens anyway. And second of all, at least the way I was putting it in this outline, I was thinking of it as mostly just a really fun thing to watch. I mean, I'm thinking of like, you know, moms of kids who all of a sudden are obsessed with the garbage truck or bulldozers. Yeah. You'll pull over at a construction site and just watch them watch something like that. Or, you know, Reed was into dinosaurs from when he was, I mean, a lot of kids go through a dinosaur phase. His started early and stayed late. I mean, he knew all the dinosaur names before he was two and we'll still talk about them at eight and a half. So it's just, it is really fun. And I would imagine aside from the costs that it's fun, like you said, with William to see interests take hold and things, especially when they're things that you didn't put in front of them. Like you didn't, you didn't nudge them in this area. It's just who they are. I think that's really fun.
It is really fun. I will say though, the one thing I think could be a stumbling block, especially maybe if it's a first time toddler mom, is that if you're following like books or development charts that make it sound like interests and skills and things are acquired all sort of like equally.
Yeah.
It doesn't really look like that.
That's
It's not linear like that.
That's
and
so
your
true.
Kid may fall into the bottom of a dinosaur pile and not emerge for 6 months. And that's okay.
Yes.
Like they're not working on their big motor skills. So what?
Yes. Yes.
And
that's vice
one
versa.
Thing I think
if you have a kid
tricky.
Who's acquiring gross motor skills like crazy, they're probably not talking as much. Yeah, that's a really good point. And one that I know, but kind of forgot to say, which is the rapid acquisition of skills does not look the same for every kid or look like what it's supposed to be in the books. But even more reason to appreciate whatever thing your kid is doing, because that's what they're meant to be doing.
Yeah. For teens, I also don't necessarily think that they need support per se, but again, the support is for the parent.
Yeah.
I think it's okay to say no and have limits on things. You don't have to be a cab driver.
Mm-hmm.
It's like involvement in everything they want to do is not their birthright.
Yeah.
And you can put them in charge of some of the things. You can put them in charge in earning money for some of those things. I have found that holidays and birthdays are a great time to support interests because it shows you pretty quickly how serious they are about something.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a kid who's a dabbler and they just want to be doing a million things and then you say, great, put it on your Christmas list. It's funny how they'll start to become a little more, you know, a little more selective.
Yeah.
And that's why we were happy to get Will a guitar for Christmas.
Yeah.
And it was a nice guitar. It was not cheap. I will spend money on a musical instrument.
Yes. Me too.
But he was never going to say he wanted a guitar in place of a video game or something if he didn't really mean it.
Right.
And he really meant it.
Right.
And so that's, that I think is like, there's little tricks you can use, little psychology tricks you can use to your advantage because your teenager is not smarter than you. Even though they may think that they are.
They think they are. Okay, so next up is this belief that they are invincible and otherwise known as a very high risk tolerance. Now, I'm predicting this is also one that's going to feel a little different for toddlers and teens. The types of risks are obviously different. And I will say with my toddlers, I had a very cautious toddler who was very aware of risk almost to the other extreme. So there's that as well. But with a good amount of toddlers, you have to watch them, you know, careening down a hill, running full force, or sliding down the big slide. And of course, they're not thinking about the potential risks. That is your job, not theirs. And so it is just a thing that has to happen, just like that independence and everything else. And some toddlers really do seem to be thrill seekers and others thrill avoiders. So curious how that works with teens.
So with teens, what I've noticed is that when we think of invincible or like no, you know, with risk tolerance or kids who get that rush out of taking risks, it doesn't always look like the kid who wants to take up snowboarding.
Right.
There is that. And there are kids who drive dangerously and there are kids who jump off piers and things like that. But some kids might do something that's really dangerous because they get like a physical rush out of it or because they were dared to and they just have no impulse control. But another one might do something really mean because they think it'll get a laugh. Another one might make a joke that's like off color that gets them in trouble because they think it's going to make them popular. I think it can be relational.
Yeah.
It can be emotional. It can be physical. So I have like started to redefine what risk intolerance looks like.
Yeah.
Or a tolerance and intolerance.
Yeah.
And because I think it's like a little bit wider and broader than we necessarily think. So the other thing about that is depending on what kind of kid you have, like what will work as far as trying to, because they can be reasoned with, they have logic and they also have strong senses of self-preservation, but you just have to know how to like appeal to it.
Yeah. And there, it doesn't always function in the moment of decision making.
No, it rarely does. And a lot of like, not all kids care at all about their future.
Yeah.
I didn't give a crap about my future when I was 15. Was like, what a future.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about today, man.
Yeah.
I'm living for today. So if you had said to me, this is going on your permanent record, it will make it difficult for you to get into the college of your choice. I would have been like, college of my choice? What was that? Like, I did not care. Had you said, you know, when you gossip, it makes it really hard for kids to trust you. And that was like my emotional landscape was much more important. My relational landscape, that kind of stuff. Like the risks I was taking didn't look anything like the risk another kid was taking.
In a fast car with no seatbelt.
But they're still risks. Right. And those toddler years and those teen years are still the time to learn from them. So I don't know. I just think my advice, I guess, would just be to know your kid and like tailor your message to what matters to them. Like some kids really don't want to lose privileges, or some kids don't want to lose their social standing. And like, you have to, you know, it's not about guilting them or adding pressure or tricking them. It's just about being really honest. I've been really honest with my teenagers about how, and it's not because it's not like I don't love you anymore, or I'm rejecting you, or I'm disapproving of you. It's like, look, this is what doing this thing could mean for you and your friends, or for how your friends' parents think about you, or how the world sees you. Like, and you have to know what they care about to know how to talk to them.
That's so good. So I guess with toddlers, the types of invincibility we're talking about are very different, the risk. But one thing I have seen good articles floating around that I'll link up in the show notes is listen to the language you use around a toddler who's particularly adventurous, because remember that the mastery, that athleticism, that feeling confident in themselves physically and emotionally, but in particular with physical, you know, feats, it comes from practicing stuff and falling down and taking a little bit of risk in a safe environment. In our outline, I wrote, buy a good car seat and a good helmet and then just look away. You know, there's when with toddlers, we live in a world that's extremely safe in general. Our playgrounds have been designed for safety. Our neighborhoods are relatively safe. So this obsession with potential harm is kind of a uniquely American and current modern problem that
like
I would.
The environment has already been made safe enough for the worst parent there is.
Exactly.
That's so you're cool.
So you, and you, I would really challenge you to do a little bit of reading. I'll link up a couple articles like I like to do, and remember that this risk is really important for them developmentally. Yeah. So instead of thinking you're a bad mom for walking away from the playground structure and not hovering underneath them, think that you're a good mom for doing that, because they are already relatively safe. And they just, they feel so much better about that mastery if you are not hovering. And that's setting the stage for all kinds of other, the role that you play as they grow up. So the one article I'm thinking about is alternatives to saying, be careful. It's like how much we say, be careful. And I totally do it. I mean, I totally do this, but instead of be careful, it offers alternatives to saying that, like, you know, do you feel safe right now? Let me know if you need help, you know, things like just little ways to tweak, like, don't do that. Be careful. Don't do that. Be careful.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think for toddlers, they're like building confidence and a lot of physical, like the physical skills they will need to power them through life, right?
Yeah.
And the teens are really developing, they're kind of setting their character.
Yeah.
And I want to build that. So like, I want them to be smart enough to know when a risk is worth taking and to have the character to say no, to get help, whatever it is. So like, that doesn't necessarily happen if I'm watching over their shoulder either, or if I'm texting them constantly, checking in or whatever. So there's that balance that has to be found. And the world is not a totally safe place for teens.
Right. That's what I was saying. Like, this is different.
Yeah. We haven't figured out yet how to make, you know, showing up at a party where there's a bunch of drugs safe for teens. I'm sure someone's working on it, but like, I'm sure there's an app for that, or like text and like Snapchat. Like, it's not a safe world for teens, but it can't be. Like, we can't control them. Like, we can't control their environments. That's the whole point.
Yep.
They're adult. Like, they're basically, their bodies have almost become adult.
Yeah.
Their brains aren't there yet.
Right.
But like, they now need to learn how to become adults. That's the whole point of parenting, is to raise, we're not raising children, we're raising adults.
Yep. And I the last thing to add to that, because that all of that is such an important discussion, is to make sure you're working on your own tolerance for your not being in complete control of your kid's safety, because that is something that I am always working on, because it's something I struggle with, because it's not, the world's not going to get safer. You're not going to get more control as they grow. So you might as well focus some of that attention on building your own resilience and kind of tolerance of being okay, even when there is risk. Okay. My last like big category is sleeping and eating. And this one I thought would just be kind of funny, because I know it's wacky in both cases. My quick note for toddlers is, we just spend that whole first year kind of learning who they are and what they like and what their schedule is, and introducing all the foods. And then all of a sudden when they're toddlers, with sleep, they can become more sensitive or fearful. Mm-hmm. Those night terrors and the nightmares we've talked about start. So you can really backslide quite a bit with sleep. And then same with eating. The baby who eats all the vegetables can become a very picky toddler. So it's mostly that it can be super frustrating as a mom. I mean, I have no doubt that you toddler moms out there are doing your level best to get your toddler enough sleep and healthy food, and whatever you're doing is enough. I think it's more just frustrating because it seems like it all changes right when you had it down. So
yeah. Well, the only thing I put on the outline under this is it's all bleeped up. Just go with it. Because honestly, like, my teens, their eating habits are bizarre.
Yeah.
They'll still eat what I put in front of them, but they'll also eat a whole bunch of other weird stuff.
Yeah.
And it's bad for you.
Yeah.
They love junk food.
Oh,
they
yeah.
love, you know, they, I don't have to provide it, but like, yeah, there's a, Owen now has convinced me to do a monthly Taco Bell run. Like he looked forward to it all month. Now he tries to work the system. He'll be like, oh, well, we haven't had Taco Bell in a month. I'm like, no, it's January 5th.
We had it.
And we
December.
Had Taco Bell on December 28th, you know? So, but like stuff like that. I mean, I'm not a stickler about
yeah.
it. I just continue to make the meals that I make and put them in front of the kids
yeah.
and hope that they'll
but
eat
you're
them.
Right. I bought so much candy as a young
yes.
teenager
oh my gosh.
And old teenager. I mean, I bought candy once a day at least. And
me
ate
too.
It.
I would stop yeah. at the gas station on the way to school and
yeah.
on the way home from school.
Yeah.
And buy like a Mountain Dew that I would mix other pop into and like I would buy a 100 grand bar. I love those. Or Little Debbie's. I mean, I was just like a junk food junkie.
Yep.
And the sleep gets weird. I remember, and we talked about this in our sleep episode, but I remember coming home and taking naps. I remember
yep.
sleeping in the morning. Owen just sleeps every chance he gets right now.
Aww.
And that's a new thing. He just needs it. Like his
like
body is growing fast. He is. And here's the beauty thing about being a teenager. You don't have to involve yourself in that.
Yeah.
You don't. You have the choice to look away.
Yeah.
And as long as they're making it to school and
yep.
they're doing okay in their, you know, studies and they're not exhausted all the time
yeah.
and they're eating enough. I mean, obviously with teens, it can get really sensitive because there are eating disorders
yep.
and there could be, if they're not getting enough sleep because they're doing too much homework or something
yeah.
that could really affect their performance. But if everything's going okay and they're basically healthy, they're just making choices you don't love.
Yeah.
You don't have to involve yourself.
Yeah.
You really can look away. And I think that's one of those things where you can start exercising some like loosening of the grip.
Yep. I love it.
Because they're going to get back
yeah.
to something that looks more normal, but it might take a while.
Yep. I was just going to say for supporting with the toddler sleep and eating issues, just lower your expectations. If it's your first kid, someone who will remain anonymous asked me a question about picky toddlers the other day. And I was yeah. like, I can't even care anymore to answer that question because my older kids are so picky that whatever the definition of a picky toddler who like now only eats three vegetables.
Right.
Like I have kids who haven't seen a green vegetable in 6 years. Like, so just start to lower your expectations and keep
yeah.
doing your best. But also don't compare your kids' eating or sleeping schedule to other people's kids. This is a time, especially in toddlerhood, where like, we really start to think like one naps, two naps, 7 o'clock
right.
bedtime or 8:30 bedtime. Like honestly, watch their cues, watch how they're thriving in their other areas of toddlerhood. And then just go with it. Like you're doing a good job. I promise.
I have to tell you, I can't care might be my favorite saying because it's not like you're saying, you're like, I would care if I could.
And
I
cared when I was in your stage.
Right.
I see that you care, but like,
I acknowledge that you care, but I can't care about that anymore. I love it.
No. Okay. So you had a couple of thoughts to start to wrap us up, but we have filled our listeners' ears with toddler
versus
teen. Oh
yeah. No, I think that, I don't know. I think we're good.
Okay.
We've
All right.
covered a lot.
Okay. We will start to wrap it up then. So instead of a cue it up with an episode to listen to, I actually wanted to point you guys to a blog post on our website that has a list of resources for parenting toddlers, like actual experts, unlike us, books mm-hmm. and websites. So if you are in the toddler phase, this would be a great place to start. If you are in the teen phase, I don't know. I feel like Megan, you just gave the teen phase people a lot to think about. That was really wise.
Yeah. And I hope that's helpful, but I also want to point people to the Center for Parent and Teen Communication. It's a really great resource.
Yeah.
You can follow the hashtag Teen Talk Tuesday. They have a Facebook page. And they also have a website at parentandteen.com. So that's Center for Parent and Teen Communication. And that's a great resource just for like how to talk to teenagers, which can be like, that could be like a whole series of episodes on its own.
Oh, I love that. Okay, guys. Well, this was really fun, Megan, and we will be back with you guys soon.
Talk to you then.